I thought I was being quite calm about this talk I'm giving this morning, and because I had finished it and I have it ready to read. And then my helpers, unbeknownst to me here at the, put the pictures of the community on the background to the words. And the I owe the Lord a morning song that we would start so much of our gatherings with as children. And I think I'm having a little bit more trouble than I thought to give this talk. But I'm ready to begin. And of course, I have my trusty Kitty here with me because she gets in the basket before church even starts and is ready to be here by my side. So I'm not without support, and I'm also among loved ones and friends. So good morning to each of you. I recently came across this handful of torn out pages from a spiral notebook, just 8 sheets of paper scrawled in blue ink. At the top, it said, "Dear Diary, 1959. When I was asked to plan a talk for a Sunday morning in July, these pages kept coming to mind. There was almost a fragrance to them, like the smell of dried rose petals pressed between the delicate pages of the Bible I used to carry to church. The psalmist wrote that our years vanish so quickly. They are like grass growing up fresh in the morning and in the evening being mowed down and withering to nothing. I felt like I had in my hand a bundle of those dried grasses or wildflowers that were mowed down in the evening, just a few days of life 62 years ago, here along Lucas Creek Road in the Warwick River community. I was being nudged to see what I could learn from them. The 13-year-old Susan was not writing about her community. She was certainly not imagining what might be happening in 2021 in that same community. She was not documenting anything but her girlish thoughts and feelings. She was the middle child of 7, looking forward to a fun summer and writing endless letters to friends from Pennsylvania and West Virginia that she had met at Laurelville Girls Camp the year before. As I today read the words I scribbled every single night for 13 consecutive days, I wonder how I had the discipline to sit at my small desk with on sticky, humid Denby summer nights, to fill the reservoir of my fountain pen with messy blue ink from a fat bottle with an inkwell inside it, to pick and choose from the events and issues of my day. No one had assigned me the chore. I didn't see any of my family members doing it. As I look back, it seems to me that I believe that what happened to me was important. I certainly never expected to share a word of it with anyone else as I'm going to do today. But it was important to me that I understood and savored what I observed to be happening on a daily basis. Verse 14 of Psalm 90 says, "O satisfy us early with thy mercy, that we may rejoice and be glad all our days." I feel that I was indeed satisfied early with mercy, and that I have rejoiced and been glad all my days. That is not to say life has been easy, or that I have not struggled, or that our community has not struggled. We have all been through unimaginable challenges, but that's the subject for a different Sunday talk. And of course, life's struggles are acknowledged in verse 15. "Make us glad according to the days wherein thou hast afflicted us and the years wherein we have seen evil." So here I am 62 years later. We won't mention the fact that I'm probably an exception to the 70 years and 10 that Psalm 90 generously allows us as a lifespan. I've passed that quite a bit a few years ago. The generations have changed. The buildings have come down and been built again. But God and this body that meets as Warwick River, you, all of you, are still my dwelling place. Even in this invisible web of Zoom that we could have never imagined in 1959 as a site of gathered worship. It so happens as well that I am physically living a mere mile from where I did in 1959. So the very earth you and I walk on is still my dwelling place. What was going on in June of 1959 right here on Lucas Creek Road? Well, first of all, there was a whole lot of going back and forth to church because it happened to be summer Bible school time. Out of the 13 days recorded on these pages, 10 of them found me inside that big white church framed by even bigger oak trees and bordered by the graveyard in the back. And I guess I could add mulberries and wild cherries that we could throw at each other in Bible school. Almost as truly as the big square white house I lived in across from Catherine and Nelson's home today, that big white church was my home. The very fact that there was evening summer Bible school for children tells me a lot about my community. Grown men with day jobs showed up each evening to teach and manage what my diary tells me was a rowdy bunch. I'm sure there were women too, but none of them made it into a diary entry. I'm just going on these random things I had. So here's a few little updates from Bible school that week. June 15th. Tonight was the first night of Bible school. What a riot. Nelson Bear is my teacher. Ronnie Brunk kept shooting green cherries, so at recess, us girls got mulberries and retaliated. We did have an interesting lesson, but 5 verses to learn? I like Daniel Nice for a bus driver. He gave us candy. June 16th. Tonight in Bible school, we had the first half outside. Those stupid guys always have to get the back seats, but we fooled them. Ronnie and I had a race to get the seats, but it was a very unfair one because I didn't know he was coming. Anyhow, we got the seat. Maybe tomorrow night we'll behave better. I hope. June 17th. Bible school tonight was too rowdy again. June 18th. Tonight at Bible school, those crazy girls got my shoe and wouldn't give it back. June 19th. This evening at Bible school, Uncle Claire came to our class and told us that several teachers had complained about our noisiness. That hushed us up. Well, enough about rowdy kids. Just remember, this was a kid writing her diary. Except I want to say, Nelson Bear, you must have been a saint. You showed up night after night. You couldn't have been much more than 20 years old in 1959. And you said yes to teaching a couple of benches full of early adolescents there in the Amen corner on the woman's side of the church. I don't know how you did it. Daniel Nice showed up to drive the bus. Claire Mumall showed up to remind us not to be a nuisance. A couple of parents showed up to sit in on the class one night to help tame us down. I say all this because in the midst of all that, children were valued. When Steve Gibbs came back to Warwick River to preach Laverne Mumall's funeral sermon, he told me something he had noticed about this community when he became a part of it. He said that he noticed that children were valued, that we were treated, I guess I'm identifying myself as a child, we were treated with fondness and interest, that grown-ups shared good times and life skills with the next generation. The grown-ups in the church made the young people their business, both in preventing bad behavior, at least they tried, and in helping them have a good time. The struggle to make us behave was real, and I put myself in that category. Even though I was a good student, I was probably pretty lively. But scribbled on the 8 pages of notebook paper, I see so much else than our rowdiness. I valued the grown-ups as much as they did me. I mentioned 20 or so different adults in the 13 days of diary keeping. My Yoder aunts that invited me for hamburgers and ice cream and a fun day in Williamsburg with cousins. Emily Shank, who took a bunch of us to the beach, even though it was pouring rain at 4 a.m., just because we said, please. My parents, Lauren and Nina, who finagled a way to host my faraway friends from Laurelville Girls Camp. My grandma, who took care of me when my tummy hurt. Today, there are no longer any large farm families to fill the church benches with children, but we hold on to our vision of children as of great value. And let's see where that takes us in the future and who we include and who we invite and who we attract when we gather again. Another thing I noticed in my diary is that hospitality was part of spirituality. Quote from June 13th, 1959. Well, since today was Sunday, I went to church. Brother John preached about lying and deceitfulness and swearing. Then Judy, his daughter, invited me for Sunday dinner and we had yum-yums for dessert. Yum, yum. Those of you who knew John and Emily recognize how perfectly the two served together to provide our spiritual and temporal food. Pastors in those days subsisted more on love offerings than secure salaries. And many a Saturday night, the Shanks would bring home crates of food from the local grocery stores at a discount, bananas that would not have lasted through to be sold the following Monday after Sunday blue laws kept the stores closed. Emily would turn such food into abundant meals for not only her 8 children and their friends, but Sunday dinners for church visitors and local families. The women's Sunday school class collected and contributed grocery money to Emily, recognizing how her gift for hospitality came at a dollar price, as well as a physical price. I remember standing in her kitchen helping Judy form the small light yeast rolls that were Emily's trademark meal accompaniment. I remember joining the Shank family for Saturday breakfast after a sleepover and watching Emily, always smiling, making pancakes by the dozen, serving them with her homemade sugar syrup flavored with maple. I still remember who won that morning's competition. Danny ate 25 pancakes and John Carl came in second at 16. I don't know how many I ate, probably a lot. In the 13 days I cover here, we didn't have any food at church, unless you count the fireball Joyce Burkholder gave me to suck on during Bible school. But food still figured largely in this 13 to this 13-year-old as a celebration and as worthy of mention in her diary. What about the morning Emily took the carload of girls to cook breakfast on the beach? Nothing better than those eggs mixed with charcoal and Emily's homemade cinnamon buns. What about the big sister who took me and the little girls out in the field for a weenie roast and to watch the moon come up and then baked apple pies when we got back home? What about coming home from Bible school and having peaches and potato chips with a bunch of friends? Food was mentioned 26 times in these 8 pages. I guess it's been a lifelong interest fostered by the good cooks of this community. As we think of our church carefully coming together again, I hope that we will once again find new ways to make food a centerpiece. Not necessarily inviting visitors home for the typical Sunday dinner around a lace tablecloth, although that would really be nice. But social events like our own Susan Dye and others have planned over the last few years to be welcoming with tasty foods. Some of the very best Bible stories took place around feasting together and around feeding the hungry. My diary bears out that sustaining and nurturing tradition. Another thing I noticed is that we were not insulated and isolated from the world. In these few pages, there was a big event at church one Sunday night. The young MCC couple, Ken and Twyla Brunk, were home from Korea. And I have no idea, Don, if you were born yet. But anyway, this is what I remember. They showed slides of their work to a packed audience. I had this to say. Afterwards, we went to church where Ken and Twyla Brunk talked and showed slides. It didn't end until about 9:20, but was very interesting. Linda and I, that would be my sister Linda, and Mrs. Clark had to get up once and stand along the walls so we could see the pictures. Who was Mrs. Clark? And why was someone with the name Clark sitting in the church along with the Yoders, Hertzlers, and Shanks? Well, she was our neighbor, the wife of a military officer. It so happened that she was about to go to Korea herself to join her husband and children as he was to be stationed there. My mother invited her to spend nights with us as she closed up the house they were renting next door to where Leona Ross lives now, originally Anna Miller's home. It must have been very interesting to her to be able to see Ken and Twyla's slides of Korea just before flying there herself. Though Mrs. Clark is just a side note in my diary, it reminds me that it was natural to share our home and our church community with others. It was natural to care about what happened on the other side of the world. And our church, through Ken and Twyla, was modeling that caring. That is a worldview that I hope we continue to maintain going forward, applying it to other ethnic groups and traditions. I noticed in my little diary that I experienced a love and closeness to nature. Living in rural Denby as a child, God's handiwork was everywhere to be seen, and I responded with appreciation and care. I was taught that from the tiniest toddler class in the basement of the old church. I remember singing, "Who made the pretty lilies?" And then people chorusing, "God did, God did." Well, here I am today, not far from that damp, dark basement in spirit. Standing in the sunny milkweed garden, watching the first monarch of the season laying her tiny creamy eggs. These last decades when Robbie and I fed and nurtured catbirds and robins were nothing new. The creation care that John just preached about in his latest sermon, it's nothing really new either. The issues of protecting and preserving our environment may be more complicated today, but what could be more straightforward than a fallen baby bird? June 20th. Today, I was cleaning the downstairs bedroom and Linda hollered. Here, there were two tiny mockingbirds on the ground. The nest had fallen through. One was dead, but the other one I put in a basket and hung it on the little mimosa tree. Finally, the scolding mother bird came and fed it. For a while, it seemed unconscious, but now it is really perking. When I touch the basket, it lifts up its head and opens its mouth wide. In almost every diary entry, there is a ferocious thunderstorm, a beautiful full moon rising, the expanse of the Warwick River. That was a huge surprise to our friends coming from like West Virginia, creeks. They call them rivers, but to me, they were creeks. They couldn't believe how big our river was. The waves and breakers of the Atlantic. As a child, I am noticing, and as a grown-up, as 75 years old, I am still noticing. And I hope that in the years ahead, we as a community will continue to honor God's gifts of nature by noticing, appreciating, and protecting them. Psalm 90 has this to say, "Let thy work appear unto thy servants and thy glory unto the children." I feel that that's exactly what happened to me and is continuing to happen to me. 8 random pieces of notebook paper can hold only so much pertinent wisdom for the future of Warwick River Mennonite Church. So I'm about to wrap up my talk. I'm tempted to tell you how my little sister Peggy was, quote, carousing around in the bedroom so I couldn't take a nap one Sunday afternoon, but it's not all that relevant. I could tell you about that cute yellow and orange bathing suit I bought in bustling downtown Newport News, and how my sister Linda and I walked from 25th Street to 50th Street looking for a shop that would repair her iron. Remember irons and ironing boards? And how we sang for fun when we were with friends, hymns and rounds and songs from school music class. I'd like to get credit for a lot of window washing and scrubbing baseboards. At 13, it really wasn't all fun and games. We spend our years as a tale that is told, and I've finished today's telling. Nelson, thank you for your patience so many years ago. I apologize for being rowdy. Ken and Twyla, thank you for your service and the bridges you built over the years, and for the prayers we now know you to offer each day. If someone sees Daniel Nice, tell him, thank you for being a nice bus driver and for giving us candy. To the rest of you, thank you for being part of my current generation, my dwelling place. I look to the future with hope and anticipation.